again, everybody. This is Harry Carey. And there's nothing I love more here in the summertime than Cubs baseball, a little Bricks Behind the Ivy podcast, and a little, nice cold zesty beverage. So here we are. Stay tuned. Buckle up. Let's listen to the boys. So long, everybody.
Hey, hey, Cub fans. Welcome back to another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. I, as always, am Jeff Berkowskis, a.k.a. Candy Cubs, joined by my fantastic co-host, Mr. Sean Chapin, otherwise known as Hot Stove Cubbies. How are you doing today, Sean?
Fantastic, just as you said I am, which, thank you, I'm very humbled by that. Today we got some big news at the time we're recording this. Dylan Cease traded to the Padres. And the one thing that jumps out at me about this trade is no one wants to deal with Scott Boras.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting, given that for the price of money, instead of players, you could have gotten a pitcher to address the rotation. And the biggest shocker here is, to me, it's the Padres in already kind of a top-loaded West, not counting the Diamondbacks, not looking at the Giants and how they've improved. The Padres going out and getting Dylan Cease. He ceases to be a White Sox, which is now probably pushing their win. Yeah, exactly. Don't worry, I'll put that in post roll. Not going to let that joke hang. But if you are watching on YouTube, you probably noticed there is a third person here. Today we are joined by Mr. Andrew Evans, most famously known as my college roommate. Just kidding, he has more important things than that. But Andy is from the Cincinnati area. He has grown up a diehard Reds fan, one of the smartest baseball guys I know. Used to play baseball in high school, had a really good fastball as a lefty. I've also seen him tomahawk dunk. I don't know if many people know that. One of the most glorious things I've ever seen in my life. This is a true story. We can add that to a B-sides of this podcast. But he did used to write... He did used to write for Mid-Major Madness, covering Valparaiso basketball when they were in the Horizon League, and briefly when they transitioned to the Missouri Valley. He's been to different conference tournaments for the NCAA and is a frequent attender of the First Four in Dayton, one of the greatest college basketball events in the whole world. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited.
Well, today we have brought you here to be part two of our NL Central preview.
Sorry, guys. We changed up the order to follow the win projections. Now back to the show.
We have already done the Pittsburgh Pirates. Tonight we'll be discussing the Cincinnati Reds, who I think are much improved from this offseason, looking at a NL Central that is very much a tight race. I think there are... an Achilles heel for each one of these teams, and there are strengths that each of these teams have that other ones don't, and it's going to be very, very challenging to figure out who's going to win the division. It could all come down to one hot streak. So that in mind, the Reds offseason, who did they add? Who do you like? How did you feel about their free agency and their offseason this year?
Yeah, it was a pretty active offseason, especially in the Reds realm. They're typically not one of the more active players in free agency. So this offseason, they added the big signing that kind of was a head scratcher for a lot of folks. But as we start to get into kind of the depth chart, how things are shaking out this spring, it's turning out to have been a pretty good move, I think. But was Jamer Candelario was a big signing, and then pretty much the rest of the signings that happened were to address pitching, which is the biggest area of concern for the team. Frankie Montas got added as a starter, and then Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan, and Brent Suter all to kind of help stabilize the bullpen as well. And then Nick Martinez will probably end up being kind of a swing man, get a few starts as well, I think, is the plan. So should be an improved rotation, still maybe not as much help as you would have liked to have gotten, but all things considered, I think the roster looks better going into this season than it did at the end of last season.
So, Andy, one of the questions that I had is, if you had to put a grade on your off season for the Reds, what grade would that be?
I would probably I think this is kind of the generic, you feel pretty good about it, but maybe didn't quite get everything. Answer would, I'd say B plus. I'm pretty happy with it, but you starting pitching still would have really liked to have seen a top line starter. I'm not necessarily upset that the Reds did not pay some of the asking prices that were reported for some pitchers. Although you did just touch on Dylan Cease getting traded, and I think the package that the White Sox got was less than what they were asking from the Reds, which is interesting. But
from everybody, I think. I mean, we saw that across the board. I think the asking price for Dylan Cease at the beginning of the winter was astronomical compared to what the Padres had to give up. So for sure.
The package that was reported, I forget at what point it was during the winter, but the White Sox had asked for four of the top five prospects in the Reds organization for Dylan Cease. So, you know, not necessarily upset they didn't pursue that. And then seeing what some of the free agent starters ended up signing for, you know, again, probably a little bit more pricey than what the Reds typically will do during free agency. So, you know, all that said, I'll say, you know, solid B plus. And I'm happy with what they did. They improved, maybe didn't quite get that like real top end starter, but still definitely got better.
Yeah. One of the moves that you guys made that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way is you felt like you guys stole Brent Suter from us. I felt like Brent Suter was the guy that was going to be in Cubby Blue, familiar with Council. It just felt like it was destiny. And then he signed with the Reds. So I don't like you for that, Andy.
Well, it's interesting. He's actually a Cincinnati guy. He went to High School in Cincinnati. It's the same high school that Barry Larkin went to as well. It's interesting, too, because the Reds for a number of years – fairly recently really did not have any left-handed relief pitching, or if they did, it would just be, I mean, quite literally one left-handed reliever down in the bullpen, which really hampered them at times. So it seems like they've really gone out of their way to address that. They added Sam Moll at the trade deadline last season, picked up Brent Suter this season. So now they've got three lefties going into the season down the bullpen.
So it's the Castellani, Bob Castellani, who owns the Reds, correct? That's the still the ownership group, not correct. Ian Happ, as Cubs Twitter.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it comes in the Barry Bonds, quite literally Barry Bonds numbers at Great American Ballpark. Like, I'm not exaggerating. It's insane.
There's a real question behind that joke, but ultimately, he's made some weird comments in recent years when it comes to financials with the team. One that I remember, a presentation that led him naming the Reds a not-for-profit organization based on ticket revenues. I feel like they spent, you know, a decent amount this offseason. They've had some solid off seasons in the past. How do you feel about general payroll management for the Reds?
Yeah, and I think it was actually his son Phil who made a lot of the interesting comments. He's also the one that made the "Where are you going to go?" comment to the fans.
Yes,
I believe that was on opening day. That I mean, if you haven't seen that clip, by the way, please look it up, because the reporter who's doing the interview gives the cameraman a like look that says, like, please tell me you are recording, because I cannot believe that guy just said that on this camera. Absolutely insane. So I'm glad to see that they were active, and I do somewhat sympathize with them. They were pretty active going into the 2020 season in free agency, signed Mike Moustakas, do a huge deal, went out and got Nick Castellanos. You had been active in the prior season's trade deadline to pick up Trevor Bauer. And that really, it worked a little bit, right? Like, they made the postseason, but that whole COVID season was just so weird. And then things just didn't pan out with that group. And so, I mean, I really do kind of sympathize where I think the COVID season kind of made them a little bit gun shy, perhaps, to go out and sign a bunch of a bunch of new big money free agents. That being said, I'm glad to see that they did invest a little bit this offseason. You know, they didn't really go out and get the big names. I maybe trust them a little bit more now than I did this time last year. I'm still not sold on the ownership group necessarily, but the front office that they've put together is very good. So while they may not necessarily provide the level of resources that I wish they would to the front office, Mick Kroll, who was the GM and is now, I believe, his title's president of baseball operations.
Yep.
Has done a fantastic job with what he's been given. I mean, really has not made a bad move in quite some time. So really seems to know what he's doing and gets the most out of the guys. And they do still have a decent amount of prospects coming up. Still a pretty fairly highly rated farm system. So I think the idea is to continue improving this season, but not necessarily, you know, sell the farm to go for it this year. I'm thinking, you know, 2025, 2026 is when they might make a few more big moves to really try to go for it.
So kind of go into what you envision for the opening day lineup offensively for your Reds team. Can you do a little bit of a rundown of what you expect? I know there's been a couple of notable changes. And just curious to see what you think that opening day lineup looks like.
Sure. Well, I mean, the biggest question mark everybody had after the offseason addition of Jamer Candelario is where all these infielders going to play. That has been alleviated somewhat by Noel V. Marte getting an 80-game steroid suspension, just not ideal, but it is what it is. So at this point now, that clears things up a little bit now. You know, before you had Christian Encarnacion Strand and Candelario at first base. Now they can slide Candelario over to third. Mm-hmm. They could also slide Christian Encarnacion Strand over to third. They've actually had him play there a couple of times during spring training already. At second base, I think second base and shortstop Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz kind of have those two spots locked down. For the most part, De La Cruz can play third. McClain can play shortstop if they need to slide them over and get Jonathan India in there. He's kind of the other, was probably the odd man out until Marte's suspension. Interestingly enough, they've also had India playing some first base in spring training. He has just recently started playing games. He had some plantar fasciitis issues. And since coming back, has hit two home runs already, which is great, but also has played a little bit first base, which is interesting. I don't know if that's just a kind of a flexibility play to see if he can do it or what that might be for. But I think that's probably how the infield's going to line up will be, I'd say, kind of a rotation of Encarnacion Strand and Candelario at first. You know, if Candelario is not playing first, he'll be at third. Then we get McClain and De La Cruz at second base and shortstop. For the outfield, Spencer Steer has pretty much been moved from the infield to the outfield full time at this point. He's kind of expected to be the regular left fielder. However, is always an option if the situation becomes dire on the infield. He can, you know, move back in and play pretty much any spot on the infield. TJ Friedl's got center field locked down. Should be a really big piece of the lineup. I think the Reds are going to lean on him heavily. It's kind of an interesting player too, where he's a left-handed bat, but hits his splits against lefties and righties last year hit left-handers significantly better than right-handers. So you really don't have to worry about him being a platoon play. He's an everyday center fielder at this point. Kind of fun fact too, if you ever get asked the trivia question, he did get an MVP vote last season. I did confirm that he got one single MVP vote last season. And then right field's going to be interesting for me, I think, because there's two pretty solid offensive players there in Jake Fraley and Will Benson. I think Will Benson's probably the longer term answer there. Jake Fraley dealt with some injury issues last year. What's interesting to me about those, they're both left-handed hitters and they don't hit left-handed pitching. So it's you can't really platoon the two of them. They both are, you know, you want to get them in the lineup against righties and neither of them against lefties. So I would expect to see one of them, probably Fraley more often than not, in the DH spot, maybe against righties. Will Benson getting a little bit more time actually in the outfield against righties. And then, you know, that's kind of another thing that really didn't get addressed too much in the offseason. I think that's something we would have liked to have seen as a kind of a you know, lefty masher type right-handed hitting outfielder. You know, kind of that Jorge Soler line of thinking. Didn't really get that, but there are potentially some, you know, some options off the bench. With Stuart Fairchild's had a really solid spring. Not that he's a replacement for like a Jorge Soler type player, but can, you know, do a little bit of damage. And then at catcher, we've got Tyler Stevenson's probably going to start the season off getting most of the looks. But I would say he's probably on a pretty short leash this year. Given what Luke Maley did last year, the Reds re-signed him, brought him back. Also a local to Cincinnati guy. He's actually from Northern Kentucky. Stevenson, I can definitely do it with the bat. We've seen it before. That's where his value is at. Just really struggled at times to hit last year. Started to show a little bit of improvement. Was had some higher exit velocities towards the end of the year last year, but it's just really a subpar fielding catcher. Does not frame well. You know, it became pretty apparent last season that it was causing some issues. And when he's not necessarily putting up above average offensive numbers for a catcher, then kind of loses the value there. So that's actually kind of an interesting position battle to, I think, keep an eye on. Stevenson's had a pretty decent offensive spring training so far. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come. But yeah, that's I think that's kind of how the opening day lineup will shake out, if that answers that question. I don't know. There's kind of a lot of positions where it's, you know, kind of a rotation, right? It's tough to say who will exactly, you know, sure. The guys who are going to be in the lineup, you know, 6 out of 7 times a week, but you just never know exactly what it's going to look like on any given day.
So when I think of the Reds lineup, excuse me, I think of speed. They seemed to run a lot last year, very young, very athletic, very dangerous, especially in that ballpark. But I think on the contrary, and you highlighted some of the issues, if you look at Zips, if you look at different things, they don't rate defensively very well. And I think it's interesting. It's almost an opposite of how I feel about the Cubs. The Cubs have, you know, some solid bats, but their defense, you know, has a pretty solid floor, depending on what happens over at third base with the Christopher Morel experience. But ultimately, I think the Cubs have a contact-oriented rotation, and we'll talk about how the Reds' rotation looks in just a moment. But I think the Reds might be able to get away with some of their defense because they have higher K rates in that rotation than the Cubs do. But I don't know if they're going to be able to avoid that. Are you concerned about their defense going into this year?
I wouldn't call it a necessarily a major concern. It is something we're aware of. I think you can get away with a little bit of deficiencies in the outfield at Great American Ballpark. It's just a smaller outfield, so that's you know, one thing. So you can kind of get away with sticking somebody in left field, like Spencer Steer, for example, who hasn't done it before. You know, get some experience, and you know, is fine, decent enough at it now. It's not a problem, but you can kind of get away with something like that in Great American Ballpark. I think on the infield, Matt McClain's pretty solid. Ellie De La Cruz has a ton of potential to be pretty solid. He also throws the ball across the infield harder than just about anybody in the game, which scares me a little bit. yeah, sometimes can get a little bit wild, but like you mentioned, the Reds have focused pretty high on strikeout rates, you know, spin rate, getting swings and misses. You know, Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, when he's healthy in the rotation up at the top of it, get a ton of strikeouts. So I definitely do think that's part of the equation. Like you said, is, you know, we know that that's not one of our strengths. Let's not even let him put the ball in play in the first place. But I do think as well, at third base, Candelario is going to be an improvement now that, I think that's actually interesting now that Marte's not going to be there. Candelario should be a far superior defensive third baseman. It should help out the infield defense there.
So transitioning then to the rotation, March 28th, 2024, opening day, at Great American Ballpark versus the Washington Nationals. I believe we already know Frankie Montas has been penciled in as the opening day starter. How does the rest of the rotation, the bullpen, look from your perspective? How's that shaping out?
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting announcement. I think a little bit unexpected. I forget what the I kind of wonder if this doesn't factor into it a little bit, although I don't know, part of me thinks that it's silly, but the Reds have a kind of an interesting streak going where they haven't had a repeat opening day starter in a pretty long time. I don't know if it's over a decade at this point.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, so last season it was Hunter Green. Was kind of thinking it would be Hunter Green again, and then they named Frankie Montas to keep the streak going. So yeah, rotation wise, I would have put Hunter Green at the top of it, but I guess we'll put Frankie Montas up there at the top. But Hunter Green's there. Nick Lodolo will be kind of up at the top as well when healthy. He missed a ton of time last season with injury, basically the whole season with injury. Sounded like he had a setback during spring training, which was concerning, but actually was able to make a start this past week and is only expecting to miss, it sounds like, maybe one turn through the rotation.
Oh, that's encouraging.
They think they're targeting April 9th.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For him to make a start. So that's a big, big deal. I mean, that's a major improvement to the rotation if he's there and healthy. And then for 4 and 5, Graham Ashcraft has shown he can be a pretty solid major league starter. He had a very interesting season last year. I mean, true definition of roller coaster, started out really solid, then was just absolutely terrible in the middle of the season, and did really well to end the season as well. He's kind of a guy where he had a ton of strikeout numbers, I think, earlier on in his career, then started to run into some issues last season and kind of backed off a little bit and was getting more contact and was having a little bit more success towards the end of the season. So it'll be interesting to see his kind of continued evolution that way. And then Andrew Abbott is probably going to be the, I think the one, if Lodolo's in there healthy, Andrew Abbott's going to be the number 5 starter. Rookie season last year, started off really, really well and then just pretty clearly ran out of gas towards the end of the year. You know, was throwing more innings than he ever had in his life. So, we'll be kind of paying attention to him as well to see how he bounces back from kind of a rough end to the season last year. But I think that's how the rotation's kind of shaping up. I know I mentioned Nick Martinez as well, probably be able to slide in and make some spot starts. So that could be the answer for if the Reds need, I haven't really looked at the schedule too closely to know if they're going to need a fifth starter before Lodolo's healthy. If they do, that could just be Nick Martinez that does a kind of a spot start for him. As far as the bullpen goes, the back end should be pretty solid. Alexis Diaz was outstanding last season. Kind of did run into, I think this is kind of the theme of the Reds pitching staff as I'm talking through it, ran into some issues late in the season. It just, these guys got overused last year because the starting pitching just couldn't get late into games. Ian Jabeau did a really good job at the back end of the bullpen as well. And I want to say, I don't know if he ended up leading the league in appearances. But if he didn't, he was very close to it. And the Reds had like 3 of the top 5 pitchers in relief appearances. These guys were just getting absolutely overworked. Jabeau, though, by the way, is probably not going to be ready for opening day. He's got, I think, some forearm tightness, I think is what I heard. But Lucas Sims on the back end, very solid. Buck Farmer got brought back in. He's done a great job. And then some of the offseason acquisitions, you've got Emilio Pagan, should be a pretty good back end of the bullpen piece. Brent Suter, that, you know, lefty to go along with Sam Moll, and then Nick Martinez, depending on where he kind of fits into things, should be there too. So the bullpen's definitely a lot deeper than it was last year, which is a good thing to hear. You know, makes you feel a lot better going into the season where you've actually got some guys with major league experience you can call on. You know, there were times last year where the Reds were just really grasping at straws, even in the starting rotation, to get guys up to fill innings. So should be much improved there.
So do you feel your starting rotation depth is an issue at all? I mean, given Montas has a total of 145 innings since 2022, do you feel like that the depth is not there, or are you pretty confident with the rotation?
Definitely am not. I mean, it's definitely something to watch as far as the health goes, of specifically Montas and Lodolo. Lodolo's had a bunch of injury issues early on in his career, and then, like you said, Montas really hasn't, you know, I think he appeared in one game last season at the major league level. Mm-hmm. So definitely some concerns there. Kind of the benefit, though, of what I just mentioned, where last season the Reds were really, especially towards the end of the year, grasping at straws to get guys up to fill innings, is now they've got guys at the highest level of the minors who have major league experience that they can call upon to make some of these starts. So, I mean, like a long-term injury to two guys in the rotation would be a big issue. Short-term stuff, I feel pretty confident they can handle, right, with both being able to pull on Nick Martinez as a swingman. And then a starter I didn't even mention going through all this was Brandon Williamson, who was a rookie last year.
Sure.
Was a trade acquisition from the Mariners. And really kind of, again, was just a guy they called up because they needed somebody to pitch. His, you know, major league debut was in Coors Field. He had not been doing well in the minor leagues. And somehow he came up and he did a pretty solid job. You know, wasn't a Cy Young Award winner or anything, but did a really, really nice job. And so he could definitely be a factor as well. You know, even if somebody doesn't get hurt, if it's just a matter of, you know, innings management, he's definitely a guy they could call on. And then at the end of last season as well, the Reds had called up Connor Phillips, who was one of their top prospects, also an acquisition from the Mariners. Thank you, Seattle Mariners, for half of our roster. and he struggled a little bit, but I mean, he's got the potential. He's got some major league experience now. He just did get reassigned to minor league camp. I don't know if it was today or a couple of days ago, but so obviously won't be starting the year on the big league roster, but he's another guy that they could call on. So, you know, I'm trying to think of like the best way to answer that question. Is it a concern? Like, yeah, because there's not a lot of proven depth necessarily, but it's a better position than they were in a year ago. And since the team was pretty successful last year, whether or not some of that was luck driven, you know, yeah, I think some of it was. But to be in a better position now than they were last year is definitely a good thing.
Yeah, I think when I think of this Reds team and a little bit of an inside baseball, I guess, thought process. So Andy and I have known each other a long time from college, and we have seldomly experienced both of our teams being competitive in the same season. And last year was, you know, the beta test of, you know, what could be said and what can't be said when one team was doing well and the other team wasn't. Usually it was a very one-sided game. One team was either really good and the other team was terrible. And that made things simple because someone didn't care while the other one was having a pretty solid season. So last year, I think both teams down the stretch just absolutely fell apart pitching-wise. You know, I think the Reds, as you noted, with, you know, rotation options, overuse in the bullpen, the Cubs, very similar situation. Some guys really leaned on to get them back into the division race towards the end of July, early August, and then some injuries to that rotation, specifically thinking Marcus Stroman as a guy who did not give as many innings and did not nearly give as many innings, good innings, as he did as in the first half of that year. Yeah, that was going into July. He was verbally negotiating his extension with the media to absolute silence and mystery injuries after that. Just a very bizarre situation. But mm-hmm. I think both teams probably went in the last year maybe not addressing that depth as well as they could, and both teams, the Cubs and the Reds, addressed that depth way better this year, as it seemed like the intent is to compete now, where last year both teams was, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we'll compete. And the irony is that based on projections and rosters, both teams are kind of in that maybe they'll compete space still, in which, you know, I don't think any team in the Central really had this like runaway offseason that other teams and other divisions like felt like they did, in which it's really separated the competition. So I guess that kind of leads into the next question we would have, which is, You know, what do you see as the strengths of this Reds team? And then as a part two of that, what do you see as a Reds fans, the strengths of the Cubs team?
Sure. I think you kind of alluded already to the biggest strength that I see of the Reds, which is team speed. These guys, when they get on base, are a constant threat to take multiple extra bases. I mean, like the extreme example last year of Ellie De La Cruz stealing all three bases on two pitches.
That was so cool.
Absolutely insane stuff going on. I was actually at that game. That was like the one good game against the Brewers to have gone to. I don't think, you know, we were awful against the Brewers last season, but that was a good one. So team speed's going to be it, applying pressure. The Reds and the Diamondbacks last year were two of the teams at kind of the forefront of really pushing, I think, the limits on the run game and how much it could. I mean, you could see what it did for the Diamondbacks, right?
Yes.
All the way to the World Series. So, I'll be interested to see how many other teams start to kind of lean on that as well. But that's definitely, you know, one of their strengths. And I do think bullpen depth as well now is significantly improved. So I would say those are probably two of the biggest strengths for the Reds. As far as the Cubs go, I mean, I know they lost Stroman, but I think there's still a lot of potential in the starting rotation to be really good. I guess you don't necessarily know what you're getting from, and forgive me if I pronounce his name wrong, but Imanaga. Did I get that right?
You got it, man. You got it.
Yeah, nailed it.
I think having a roommate named Rogalskis for 2 years probably helps pronunciation of things.
But I mean, it could still be a pretty solid rotation. I mean, obviously Justin Steele was amazing, really, really good last year. I kind of see him in a similar way that I see like Hunter Green almost, you know, with Justin Steele having more of a longer sustained streak of success, to be fair. But they both have shown like flashes of, I can be, you know, the ace of this rotation. It's just, you know, you have to kind of prove it, right? You know, can you do this year after year? So I definitely think the Cubs rotation is pretty solid. And in the lineup now, they've re-added Bellinger, is still pretty solid. Yeah, I mean, I know kind of first base might still be a question mark, and you're not necessarily sure what you're getting at third base with Morel. I mean, I don't think Morel's a question mark on offense. It's more, you know, can he stick in the lineup at a certain position? But, I mean, yeah, I would say starting pitching, and then yeah, just that day to day lineup offensively is still kind of scary to me. I still have a little bit of shell shock from. There was a series later in the year. It was a four gamer where the Reds went to Chicago. I can't remember exactly where they were in the standings at the time, if the Reds were in first or if they were in a close second. And, I mean, we're really in the thick of things and won the first game in Chicago, but really kind of had to tax the bullpen to do it. And then just the rest of the series, the Reds got just absolutely slaughtered. I mean, every game the Cubs offense was just teeing off on them. So, and that's kind of what stuck in my mind about the Cubs ever since then. So that's what scares me the most.
Yeah, it was not to invoke any PTSD, it was a early August series, yeah, in which, you know, I think that first game was very close, and they were looking the rest of the weekend as like 16-6, and then like a 15-4, mm-hmm, just absolute explosion.
Yeah, Ben Lively, that guy pitched his heart out for the Reds last season. I think he's with Cleveland now. I mean, wish him all the best. Seems like a good enough guy. But I mean, his numbers just got absolutely destroyed by that one start, and the Reds just had no other choice than to just throw him to the wolves. He was just getting crushed. You know, man, you just gotta take one for the team. salute to you, Ben Lively, wherever you're at.
So, moving on, I guess, you know, there's a yin to every yang. Weaknesses, what would you say the Reds' biggest weakness this year? And then, of course, what do you see as a weakness for the Cubs?
Sure. Weakness, I guess, like you mentioned as well, I said I wasn't super concerned about it just because you can get away with a little bit more at Great American Ballpark, I think, defensively. But that's still probably the biggest question mark of the team is is defensively you've got, you know, an infielder playing left field on most days, whether that's going to be Spencer Steer or potentially Jonathan India as well. You know, you're kind of, like I mentioned, sacrificing some defense for offense at catcher, which has reared its head more than once as an issue. So that's probably the biggest weakness for the Reds. As far as the Cubs go, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I know all the ins and outs of the Cubs as much as you both do. So feel free to disagree with me if you would like.
No problem, Andy. I'll feel free to disagree.
I mean, I do think there's a hole at first base.
Like, just say with all due respect that you can say whatever you want.
There's still kind of a question mark at first base, which is just one position. It's not, you know, the end of the world. I know they got Michael Busch, but kind of, again, that unproven, like, let's see him do it at the major league level. Maybe he'll be really great. He's a highly touted prospect, but maybe he won't. You just don't know. And I know they've got Patrick Wisdom as well with, you know, ton of power, but ton of swing and miss as well. Mm-hmm. You know, does he fit in there? I'm not sure. And then besides that, I think, you know, I know that they addressed bullpen depth as well this offseason with, you know, Hector Neris, but that's kind of one spot where I think, and this might just be my own bias, I would view the Reds bullpen a little bit higher than I would view the Cubs bullpen right now. But I think the Cubs rotation helps you out a little bit there to where they can get, you know, the Cubs bullpen, it theoretically shouldn't have to eat up as many innings if those guys are doing the job that they are capable of doing, right? So that's kind of what I would point to as potential weaknesses.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, Michael Busch is a question mark. I mean, seeing him this spring, you know, is really encouraging. But again, it's spring training, small sample sizes. But you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a question mark there. The pen, I mean, I'm encouraged by some of the pitchers in the pen. But I think overall, and Jeff has touched on this in another podcast, swing and miss is missing from this Cubs pitching staff in general. We don't have a guy that's gonna strike out, you know, have that strikeout rate per nine innings at 12. You're just not gonna get that from this Cubs team, and that's something that we're sorely missing. So, yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, I think that's still my biggest concern, and one that I really wish they addressed this offseason was another arm for the rotation that swing and miss. And I think, you know, I know Sean, you and I had some discussions publicly and not publicly on Twitter or X or whatever it's called about, you know, alignment with the Mariners, looking at like the Marlins, yep, and their young arms, and like kind of dreaming about guys that could slot into this rotation and bring just a completely different type of pitcher. You know, I think one that I personally looked at, it might be pie in the sky, I thought, was Jesus Luzardo from down in Miami. And, you know, I think one of, you know, George Kirby or Bryce Miller or one of the guys over in Seattle,
Logan Gilbert. I put money on him for Cy Young. I mean, that's how convinced I am of that guy.
And yeah,
I
think hands that's off Logan Gilbert. He's ours.
And I think that's the issue. You know, it's interesting thinking too about, you know, Christopher Morel being the Cubs third baseman. You know, we're going to get the good with the bad. It's going to be an experiment. I did see, you know, last night there was a really good play where he didn't have much time. He seems to be doing better in plays in which he has to be quick. It's the ones where he's slowing down to think about the throw have been going poorly, which is pretty common when you're trying to learn a position. And his arm slot has always been the concern. He throws very hard, but he throws from kind of like, I would say, like a 45 degree angle, not over the top. So that's just going to lead to a lot of balls sailing, especially if throwing as hard as he does. And that's going to happen. And I worry with this rotation, you know, as good as Dansby and Nico are up the middle, Like, if Christopher Morel gets into the wrong inning and extends an inning on a rotation that doesn't have a lot of swing and miss, like, what are we looking at FIP-wise, like, fielding independent pitching? Like, what are we looking at for a rotation that's not going to get these guys that are inheriting base runners? Like, the defense needs to be really strong on a contacted orient rotation. It's just what is what it is. And that to me is still the biggest concern. It's one, you know, I think that can be addressed. I think early in the offseason, I was hesitant based on some of the health concerns on, like, the Shane Bieber discussions. But depending on how the Guardians play, he's looked pretty healthy in spring with the velocity already higher, you know, than it has been on average in the last two seasons. So, like, maybe something health-wise has been addressed, and maybe that's a door you open for, you know, a mid-season acquisition. I know the Reds are very much in the conversation or mentioned in the conversation, so it'll be interesting for both of these teams. I feel like there's a lot of similar discussions, similar trades, similar top 100 prospects. You know, both have 5 to 7 in that top 100 list, depending on which, you know, publication you look at. So that to me means the teams have ammo to address needs at the trade deadline, and both are probably just looking to be in the hunt by July. And I think both are set up to do so. Obviously, the Cubs are going to have the setback to start the year without Jameson Taillon, which I know there is a joke in there about, is that a setback based on how he started last year? But it is a setback because I don't think the guy that started last year is the guy you should expect. I think he was much more the guy that was the second half of last year. And it's just, especially when a guy gets a contract and comes here and things like that happen, you just feel for him because, you know, like, they want to produce. They're human beings. They want to do what's best for the club, and he was going to be a big part of this rotation. And I mean, you could still, both the Reds and the Cubs, maybe the Cubs more than the Reds, could open their checkbooks and take one of these free agent pitchers that's still out there to address their short term. And as we addressed at the beginning of the podcast, and Sean, you had mentioned, is everybody afraid of Boris and whatever he's trying to get for these pitchers? Because the Padres go out there to address their rotation needs and get Dylan Cease instead of spending money. And it sounded like the Giants were in that and the Rangers were in that conversation as well. And I don't know. I felt like that rumor came out of nowhere yesterday, and it was saying the Yankees, and there wasn't even a dribble of the Yankees today at them being involved. So are they just expected to have to pay because they can for a piece in the rotation to address what might be turning into a pretty major Gerrit Cole issue? But not to get into a Major League Baseball pod, this is an NL Central preview on a Chicago Cubs pod. But I think that transitions us to the last section and maybe some closing thoughts. We were talking before we started recording, and we all felt, I think, the over-under was a lot lower for the Reds. At least we remember it being lower, but a few betting places, no free ads, we're not going to say what betting places we looked at, unless you would like to sponsor us, then we will say the name of your website. But the over-under...
Several times.
Yeah, exactly. As many times as you'd like. For a price. But ultimately... The over-under is at 82.5. I think we'll go around. We'll start with Andy as our Reds expert. Do you see over or under 82.5? I think that's a really tough number.
That is much tougher than, I think when we had thought we were looking before, the over-under was slightly below 500, which I was very confident in saying over on at 80. And I mean, it might seem silly now. We're talking 82.5. It's, you know, two wins over as opposed to under, but they finished last season with 82 wins. You know, you'd think roster got better on paper, so therefore should win more games, right? And then if you also look at the rest of the division, you're kind of saying, okay, did anybody else get better? Significantly, I don't think you could necessarily say anybody did for sure get a lot better. So you'd like to think, you know, over. On the flip side, though, this is me giving a super wishy-washy answer here. I will go definitive one way or the other at the end, but just, you know, hear me out here. On the other hand, I do think the Reds were playing a little bit over their heads last season. There was definitely some luck involved. They won more games than they probably should have. They also have a lot of, you know, guys who are still considered rookies or just coming off of rookie seasons where they still don't even have a full length major league season under their belts at this point. And you're really counting on them to be major pieces on the team, like, you know, Matt McClain, Christian Encarnacion-Strand, Ellie De La Cruz, you know, Nolly Marte once he comes back. So they're all guys who showed that they can really hit when they were up and you know, could definitely play. I mean, they won a ton of games, but for the team when they got here, but you know, you just don't know for sure what you're getting there. So that makes me a little hesitant just to like definitively say over. I guess I'll be the optimist and say over, but I don't think it's going to be by more than one or two wins. You know, I think this is a team that they have the potential to win the division. I mean, the division's not super strong. You know, if guys play up to what they were showed they could do last season, then they could be right there. I would also not be surprised at all if they take a slight step back and finish a little bit below 500 either. You know, I mean, and I don't even think that would be super disappointing from my perspective either, as long as these guys prove that, you know, they're solid big leaguers, can put together a whole season, right? I'm kind of really eyeballing 2025, 2026 as seasons where I think that they should really take a big step forward and start, you know, winning playoff games. So my official answer is going to be over, just because I want it to happen. We'll go with that.
All right. So, you know, as you said, 82.5 is really tough. I mean, I would probably put him right in that 82, 83 range. So, I'm going to give equally as a wishy-washy answer. One thing that you did say that stuck out to me is I feel like this Reds team is improved. And I do think there's players that are going to take a step forward. Hunter Green, I mean, if he can just get his control issues down just a little bit, that guy's got top of the rotation, you know, potential there. And the speed, I see this Reds team stealing runs and manufacturing runs with that speed. I remember one game that they played against the Cubs. I think they stole four bases in that game and just kept on running around. And so it's like, I'm going to be optimistic on this and say the over, but barely, probably like an 83. Mm-hmm. I'll take the over.
Sure. And speaking of Hunter Green as well, I think it is, I will be interested to see. I forgot to kind of mention this during the rotation section, so sorry I'm interjecting this now, but you mentioned his control issues. He has really to this point been two pitches, fastball, slider.
Sure.
Kind of like tried to mix in a changeup last year, just it doesn't work. Has been messing around this spring, and I know everybody messes around with new pitches in the spring, so take it with a grain of salt, but has been trying to work on a curveball and a splitter, I believe. And I think the splitter is actually working. So
during spring's tough.
if he can just get a third consistent pitch, I mean, even I'm not even necessarily worried about the control. It's just give them something else to look at. Because I mean, I think one of his big issues, just giving up the home run ball where guys are sitting on something and they get a hold of it. So if he can add something else, that he'll be much improved.
Yeah, that's such a big component, is that mental factor of going and doing that bat and knowing what in theory is coming. It's a 50-50 coin flip in versus Hunter Green in the past, and he still has been as successful as he has been. And it's always interesting, not that this is an indicator of how a player plays, but he was always a really hard pitcher to use versus people in MLB The Show for that reason, because his repertoire was so thin. Like, even as a player in MLB The Show, it's like, all right, well, he's got that blow up by me fastball, but I can sit that and spin on the off speed stuff because that's the out pitch. And I had read a really interesting piece today on, I believe it was on FanGraphs, about two strike fastballs and guys who try to get a little extra oomph on a two strike fastball and the success of that pitch. And, you know, I don't necessarily want to spoil the entire article, but the conclusion was that pitch ended up being very invaluable, because the whatever it took to get the extra oomph from these guys, even guys like Shohei Ohtani was on this list, they would lose spin, control, like location and crispness to that pitch, and it would just get a lot of the times hit really hard, or it would lose the zone and they'd walk players. So the run value of a two strike fastball with extra velocity for a pitcher is extremely low. And I wonder for a player like Hunter Green, who has had a very minimum, you know, repertoire, who is known for that just elite velocity, if that comes into play. So being able to, you know, kind of mix in another pitch could be huge and unlock another level for him. But, you know, going back to the original question of over under, I went through this spiel in our Pirates episode, and, you know, I'm going to assume we have some new listeners and a whole bunch of returning listeners. And yeah. I think when we look at over unders, especially within the same division, I try to think of like the calculus of, if I select over on this team and I select under on this team, like some team has to drop and another team has to go up. And this is an extremely challenging division where, like, we, the Pirates yesterday were at like a 78.5. And I believe, you know, the, not spoiler alert, the Brewers are in like the 77, and the top of this division is only at 84. So we're talking, you know, 4-5 game swing between the middle of this division and the bottom of this division, supposedly. And I just struggle to think that this Reds team would necessarily be a team at the bottom. And I also look at, like, contracts. I look at the potential on an individual team's roster to flip guys at the deadline, which, you know, is going to decrease the likelihood of, you know, them selling off if they have a lot of these long-term commitments. And this is a division that is filled with either longer contracts for certain guys or young players that aren't necessarily getting moved in the middle of a season. So it's going to be about who can add at the deadline if the division is closed. And, you know, the Absolutely. Reds look set up to do that. I think the Cubs are actually pretty well set up to do that with some outfield depth. So I would say that the Reds for me right now, I'm a little more strong on the over on that 82.5 because of the ability to potentially address some of their pitfalls at the deadline with some of that, you know, that minor league system depth, where I don't think that's necessarily there for two teams I'm thinking of right now that I'm going to answer that question very differently for, because it is going to be really surviving to July and then enhancing to win this division, or enhancing or standing pat and hope you get one of those wild card spots, because that is really what this division is right now. And I know it has a reputation of not being strong, especially the last few years. And you look at both central divisions, the AL Central and the NL Central, just a lot of just tough situations of really knowing what the direction of the team. Maybe the only team I would say that's picked a very solid direction is the White Sox of absolute Tankville, where they just like have no intention of competing necessarily in the near future. I'm sorry to all of our White Sox fan friends. I really am not sorry. But ultimately, yeah, I'm going to take the over on this Reds team. There's too much I like about it. I think Ellie De La Cruz is so good for baseball. I think I'm going to miss Joey Votto so much on this roster. Mm-hmm. He's been a mainstay. He is an absolute amazing social media follow. He seems like not only just a very thoughtful guy, very intelligent guy, but just top-notch personality. Hope when the game is done for him, he ends up in a booth somewhere, maybe fringe Hall of Fame conversation based on the numbers he's put in the eras he's
How dare you say fringe, sir?
Was that a poke at Andy? Because I think he's for sure Hall of Fame.
Well, we had this conversation.
I get the argument against, but it, I mean,
I'm not going to say against. I haven't looked at his numbers. I'm going to look at him right now, because we had this conversation yesterday about Andrew McCutchen. And my gut reaction would have been Andrew McCutchen, Hall of Famer. And then I looked at his numbers and had not realized just how long it's been since he's been a very good player. So Joey Votto, to me, has been a very good player. But based on this conversation on Andrew McCutchen, I didn't want to sound dumb, but now I feel like I'm going to sound dumb.
If you're an OPS guy, Joey Votto is a shoo-in.
Yeah.
For sure. If you're a kind of like, I don't know, like maybe like milestone guy, right? Like, does he have 3,000 hits? No. Does he have 500 home runs? No. Right? Like, does he have a 300 career batting average? I think he slipped below that the past couple of years. But, I mean, it was just so, so solid for so long, getting on base. I personally think he should be in first ballot.
Dear Colonel Joseph Votto, my name is Candid Cubs, and I would like to apologize for slighting your name in such a horrible way. Looking at your career 920 OPS, I am a simpleton, and I am so sorry for implying that you are not a Hall of Fame, but you are a Hall of Fame baseball player. Congratulations, sir. I believe you would, if I read this correctly, you would have to go like 0-4,000 this year for his on-base percentage to drop below 400 for his career. So,
yeah,
Andy, first of all, I am sorry. And Sir Joseph Votto, who I'm sure is a diehard fan of this podcast, I am also very sorry.
If he's not, he will be. I'm just glad that all of the shopping carts in the Cincinnati area are safe. I don't know. If you're not familiar with this, Joey Votto had gone on Instagram and said, you know, as long as he had remained unsigned, he was no longer going to return shopping carts to the cart corral in the parking lot. And then had begun posting videos of himself intentionally pushing carts away from the cart corrals at local Whole Foods. So I'm just glad that's over with and we can all move on.
I now have a random question. I have a random question for you, Andy. He had said to the Toronto media that the number he wanted to land on was one that he's always wanted to wear, but it was retired in Cincinnati. Do you know what number he's referring to?
I don't. I haven't seen what number he's gotten in Toronto. I did see the interesting thing was that he expects to start the year in AAA and is like fully okay with that. I kind of thought that was part of probably the sticking point of why he hadn't signed yet was, teams not committing to giving him a opening day big league roster spot. Maybe that just turned out to be, he wasn't going to get that anywhere, but I was kind of surprised that he, was willing to kind of try to work and prove himself again, that he could still be a big leader. So
that's dude who just loves baseball.
Yeah,
I mean, he's probably one of my favorite Cincinnati Reds besides Adam Dunn. I love Adam Dunn as much as Madden loved Brett Favre.
That's a lot. Speaking, that's a statement.
Yeah.
Speaking of OPS guys, Adam.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Mentioned that, smaller outfield in Cincinnati. That's kind of, they designed the stadium that way for the big, lefty mashers. They had Ken Griffey Jr., Adam Dunn.
Yep.
Let's get him to poke as many Ian home Happ runs as we cut out of there, and now it's come back to bite us with
the Ian, great Ian Happ,
Ian Henry Aaron Happ. Made all the worse by the fact that he is a University of Cincinnati Bearcat. Just
yes. So before we let you go, Andy, I do want to kind of highlight something that I think that maybe not the average baseball fan is aware of. But the opening day festivities out in Cincinnati, can you give us just a flavor? Since the Cincinnati Reds are the oldest organization in Major League Baseball, and they have just a really cool like section of their ballpark that talks about the Big Red Machine and all the different parts of their history. They're a very storied franchise. So, some of the commentary by ownership of the not-for-profit and stuff, this is a team that has been in a place in this country for a very long time, an institution, and kind of leading the charge every year of the opening day should be a national holiday. It's a very mm-hmm. cool event that I actually wasn't aware of until I started talking to you about the Reds.
Sure. Yeah. So, for those who aren't aware of the Reds, this was true, but I think there's only been, I want to make sure I get this right. I think there's been two instances where they haven't held opening day in Cincinnati. where they get a home game every opening day. One of them was, I believe, the COVID season, and another one I think was a strike shortened season. Mm. Other than that, they get opening day at home every year, kind of in honor of that, you know, being the first professional baseball team. And so yeah, it's a huge citywide event. There's a big parade. They have past and present players going through the city on cars and floats, basically. It turns into a pretty big citywide party. A lot of area employers, if it's not an official day off work, it's kind of treated as one.
That's so cool.
It's definitely a really cool thing. And they've also started doing I don't know when they exactly started it. I've noticed it more in recent years. They also do now a kids opening day, which is the second home game of the season, which is really cool to have the players do a red carpet walk, sign a bunch of autographs for little kids before the game. It's all a bunch of kid oriented stuff on the second game of the season. So yeah, they do a really good job with the opening day festivities. It's a huge deal even for people who aren't necessarily, diehard baseball fans. Everybody still knows that Reds opening day is a big deal.
Yeah, we have some friends over at a podcast called Baseball Bucket List. Free ad, because she's really cool. I've had a great conversation with her about my space down here and just my Cubs story about a year back, which is probably the genesis of this podcast. Just being on a podcast, kind of introduced my interest into the space. But I think that Reds opening day festivities should be on every baseball fan's bucket list of activities. Just the pageantry around the celebration of the start of, everyone on this podcast and probably people listening's favorite sport. Just such a cool thing. And yeah, I'm not sure the general public is as aware of it as they should be. And maybe I'm speaking from significant ignorance.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That is so freaking awesome. I mean, that is, I'm impressed. That is a special day, and opening day should be a national holiday for sure.
And just an extra incentive to come to it if you ever get a chance. And this will also give you a glimpse into the level of my nerdiness and love for baseball. I play vintage baseball, which we play by 1860s rules, wear suspenders, no gloves, all this sort of thing. And usually a few of the area teams will march in the opening day parade as well. So I haven't gotten a chance to go down to march in the Reds opening day parade yet. Hoping to at some point. But if you come down, you might see me wearing suspenders.
So. Oh, that's awesome.
For me, that is worth the price of admission alone.
Yeah.
I would be, but I know that you've also done that at, there's the Dayton Dragons, which is the single A
yes.
affiliate of
Correct.
The Cincinnati Reds. And I know you've played at that field, and I tried to do vintage baseball out here and just smashed the bejesus out of my hands and was a big baby about it. So, and that Midwestern cold and that hard ball, just did not add up, and just chronicled to my long storied frustrating baseball career as a average to below average baseball player who loves the game as much as someone who is good. But thanks again, Andy, for coming on. If people are looking for just general Reds commentary or anything on social media, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at AndyEvans16. I'll have to live up to your ongoing commentary standards. I'm more of just a repost cool Ellie De La Cruz videos kind of guy. But maybe I'll throw some comments in there.
There you go. I think reposting Ellie De La Cruz footage is good for the sport anyway. So if you're looking for that.
And you'll also have to deal with Cincinnati Bengals stuff as well. So if you don't want that, you're clear. But if you're okay with that, please join.
Well, once again, I am Jeff Rogowskis. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram as Candid Cubs, and recently started a Reddit community for the podcast. Check it out. Comment on things you see from the episodes, make suggestions, volunteer to tell us how much you love us or start a thread on the stupid things we say and we can keep track of them. Whatever you want to do, we will love the interaction. And Sean, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me on two basic platforms, Facebook and Twitter /X. I'm still not used to saying X. And that's at Hot Stove Cubbies.
I also know you're on Instagram because I tagged you in something. So he is also on Instagram.
That's on the DL. That's on the DL.
Yeah, that's the super secret Instagram. So maybe there's fun stuff there. You should go check it out. Follow. Because that's where Sean keeps his skeleton.
Oh, I didn't know we were dropping our OnlyFans links.
It's only bad.
Yeah. There you go. Well, once again, this has been another episode of Bricks Behind the Ivy. Please make sure that you subscribe if you're listening to the audio podcast, or subscribe, like, and comment if you are checking this out on YouTube. But thanks for coming in, and thanks for listening. We'll see you guys again soon.
Bye.
Hey, Cup fans. Hey, BBTI fans. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Hey, if you didn't know, we are giving away 3 sets of Cub tickets, my Cub tickets, in section 330R, row 3. Beautiful seats at beautiful, historic Wrigley Field. How do you win them? Just go wherever you're listening to this podcast and review us. Review us and then share a picture that you reviewed us on Twitter, and that gets you entered. If you share that picture on our Reddit community, that's another entry. If you follow me on Twitter, another entry. There's more rules on my Twitter, so check it out. See you guys on the next episode of Reds Preview.
Holy cow!